So we're saying we're open, but the doors are closed. There's a lot of bias that goes on there. There are a lot of dysfunctional processes. If they get through and we manage to hire women, we need to set them up for success. So it's not about ticking a diversity box or, you know, adhering to or meeting a target or a quota. You know, it's really kind of making sure that they're set up for success and they're developed and you are retaining them and your other people for as long as possible, which isn't happening. In security, we have a problem of retention.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to the latest episode of Upwards. Today, I have a very special guest all the way from the other side of the planet. Joining me today is Jane Franklin. Welcome, Jane. Thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Phil. It's so good to be here.
You're welcome. Now, what time is it over there? It's early morning, isn't it?
Yeah, it's just gone 8:30.
As we record this, it's about 7:30 in New Zealand, so we're truly a tribal globally here. I wanted to introduce Jane because she is doing some amazing things, and there's quite a sort of list of things that I could say. But principally, Jane is an award-winning cybersecurity leader, influencer, board advisor, author, speaker, awards judge, recognized by Wiki, UNESCO, and LinkedIn Top Voices as well. So there's lots that's got going on there. Jane has written some amazing books. She runs a business around consulting and particularly around diversity and leadership and is doing some incredible work. And I think we're really beneficial to hear what she has to say today. So Jane, I'm really looking forward to digging into that a little bit further with you and really understanding, you know, your story and what you're all about in terms of the work that you do now and its different sort of platforms. So thanks again for coming on the show. And if you don't know me, my name is Phil. I'm founder and CEO of Omidy. We're a cybersecurity company. And so this is a podcast that we talk about leadership, security, and privacy, and also technology and startups as well, and the sort of intersection of those sort of three things and the interesting challenges and opportunities that creates for us in this world. So Jane, tell me a little bit about you, perhaps to start with, you know, your background. You've got an incredible story, you know, and like reading your LinkedIn profile is like a sort of masterclass in how to do this. But I'd love it if you just would start to share a little bit about you and what you're doing.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. Well, I've been in the industry for like over 2 decades. And I originally came into the industry from having no tech qualifications at all. So my background is art and design. And, you know, after graduating, I fell pregnant with my first son. I've got 3 kids. And even though I was successful as a designer, so I had an agent, I was selling work all over the world, in galleries as well, like Christie's. And I wasn't making enough money to support my family. I was a single parent. And so someone said, look, you've got a good brain, go and get yourself a proper job. And so I retrained, didn't know what I was going to do, and ended up entering sales. And sales was something that I never thought I wanted to do because I'm an introvert. So I'm actually quite shy and very much an introvert by nature, which is interesting considering all the stuff that I do. So I kind of entered sales, met a new boyfriend. He was in technology. And after about a year of doing well in that job, and, you know, I was ready for a new challenge. So he said, look, how about we go start a company? And that's kind of how it all started. So literally, I went straight into tech by building my own company in my 20s, wow, not knowing anything about security. I mean, security was new. And that's where I was, you know, back in the day. It was looking at technology and really thinking, well, what's interesting? And the only 2 things that really interested me at that time were AI or security. And AI was too new, but security was feasible. So I just got on and with my business partner, and we were really focused and knew exactly what we wanted in terms of like how fast we wanted to build the company, how much we wanted to sell it for, what type of company it was going to be, where our key kind of strengths were. And we just got on with it. And we kind of had we had ups and downs. You know, we almost lost the company at one point during the dot-com boom bubble, you know, when that burst, and learned the important lesson of cash is king. It doesn't matter what your sales pipeline is like, you know, cash is king. So yeah, managed to turn it around and just built this amazing company. And then since then, I've kind of like accidentally, and I say accidentally because it's true, you know, man plans and God laughs is something that I'm for what you're saying, you know, but, you know, it's, I've accidentally kind of ended up becoming this champion for women, this voice for the voiceless, this activist slash change agent, and yeah, really kind of focusing in on women and how we can get more women into cybersecurity and other male dominated industries. So yeah, I mean, I do a lot. You read it all out at the beginning, and I'm like sitting there kind of going, oh my God, it sounds crazy. And I think that is very much, you know, me. It's like madness, craziness, hugely ambitious, really serving from the heart, you know, serving my market and serving myself as well, which is something that I've kind of more recently discovered. You know, I figure into this whole equation. It is really important that I do my best work, I play to my strengths, and I design the life that I want to live, you know, so yeah.
That's incredible. I mean, that's such an unusual path. I mean, I don't know many designers that go into cybersecurity. Although, you know, I could possibly be one of them myself, but that is an amazing pathway. And you're still here, you know, still doing it. And yes. So there must be some things that you've really learned along the way that you've done right, because, you know, it is a hard path sometimes, and running businesses and all those sorts of things. So you've definitely, you know, you've done it long enough that you've no doubt figured out some pretty important things as about yourself and about leadership as well. We could talk about that real soon. So let's talk a little bit about, you know, how, you know, the diversity efforts that you're putting into, you know, women in cybersecurity and even in tech in general has, you know, long been a huge imbalance. And so, and like, you know, and no doubt other industries as well. What's, you know, what have you come to, what's your central thesis around this in terms of, you know, what is, where does the problem really start and how can we be part of fixing this?
Yeah, well, there are lots of things going on, and it's certainly when we're looking at companies, it's individual for that company. So they might be doing some things right, but other things are just not working. And so there, I think there are three main areas. So there's that kind of attraction piece, that awareness piece. So are we doing a good job, you know, say in security or tech, of really describing what it is that we do and what that looks like? And in security, it's so diverse now. There's so much opportunity, whether you're technically orientated or whether or not you're not, and you're more kind of like people focused. So we've got to do a good job of that. We need to get into the schools earlier and be consistent with that and make sure that we are keeping in contact with the students, you know, all the way through. And then we also need to look at the career pivoters. So those who are out, you know, working a job, but maybe looking for a challenge or are dissatisfied, you know, and just want a new turn, because there are plenty of people out there. So that's like a big area. And I really think we're doing a much better job of that than ever we've done before. And the second area is the hiring bit. And this is where we fall down. So we're doing a great job of evangelizing and raising the awareness and saying, this is really cool. Like, you know, it's forward thinking, it's dynamic, you can be well paid, come join us, we want you. And then with the hiring aspect, there are, it's almost like the doors are closed. So we're saying we're open, but the doors are closed. There's a lot of bias that goes on there. There are a lot of dysfunctional processes. You know, I write extensively, and one of my recent blogs actually talks about a process that really was not benefiting all people. So mm-hmm. women were looking at it in one way, and it didn't help them to be, you know, hired because of how they were behaving. So that needs to go on. And then really it's that development piece. You know, the third area really is, okay, well, if they get through and we manage to hire women, we need to set them up for success. So it's not about ticking a diversity, you know, box, or, you know, adhering to or meeting a target or a quota. You know, it's really kind of making sure that they're set up for success and they're developed, and you are retaining them and your yeah. other people for as long as possible, which isn't happening. I mean, in security, we have mm-hmm. a problem of retention. I think certainly in the UK, there was a recent report that was done, and the average tenure for someone was less than 2 years. I think it was 1 year and 10 months, you know, so, and that's not, it's not acceptable that, and certainly it's not comparative when you're looking at other industries where I think the average tenure is about 4 years. So, you know, we're really, we have a leaky pipeline. We're not doing a great job there. So there are there are things that we need to do to make sure that we are doing a better job for not just women, but for all people.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's a little bit like, you know, it's sort of like our business needs to not only win customers, but then keep them. And it's not, it's only one half of the equation, you know, to hire somebody and to say, great, we've got, you know, we've got sort of people on the pipeline and we've hired them, but then you actually have to develop and keep them. And it's that complete, that's the whole story arc, as it were, with and people.
You know, the 80-20, I mean, it's just like the cost. You know, when we're talking about leads and things like that and acquiring clients, then 80% of the cost goes into that business development generation. And it's kind of similar with this, you know, so it's just like all of that cost to recruit and hire. And then, you know, that they're not set up for success, you know, and that they're leaving. And also the other thing, you know, when it comes to women really are the canaries in the cage. You know, so if you've got a problem, you know, in your team, in your organization, you know, the women will signal it first, and it's going to be a case of they'll be exiting, and then like, well, what's happening with the people? Because what's good for women is good for men too. You know, it's
exactly.
Like
exactly, indeed. And listen to those people. It's easy to, you know, some people may ignore those sort of warning signs or ignore those little early signals, and I've definitely made that mistake myself in the past, but I've learned that, you know, every time you hear something little, it's worth kind of pulling that thread a little bit further and going, okay, what's going on there, because that might be just the first part your understanding of what's really going on. Tell me a little bit about, you know, some of the mistakes maybe companies make in the hiring process, because, you know, we've if the hiring process, as we know, is designed and carried out by you know, by men, then we're clearly going to be making some mistakes there. Can you tell us a little bit about some common mistakes or things we can do better during that hiring process, and even indeed the way that we design our jobs, you know, that so they're more inclusive and workable for different people?
Yeah, so it's really kind of starting off with like your job description. So really looking at, well, what exactly do you want? You know, so less, you know, to do more, you've got to do less. So keep those short and really look for the skills and the behaviors and the values that you want. So be really, really clear on that. And don't copy and paste to save time from a great big, long job spec, you know, wanting certifications and things like that, unless they are absolutely necessary. So really work hard to craft a good job description and make sure your language is gender neutral. That's much more preferable. You can use processes. So there's some really good tools out there that will help you, not just with that aspect of making sure that you're using gender neutral language, but the whole process, you know, of actually going out there to attract and then interview, you know, first stage in interview. So you're asking work sample questions. So questions that really relate to the job. You're not necessarily looking at a CV or a resume. You're actually going through, these are the skills and these are this is the type of work that you will be required to do in this scenario. What would you do? You know, so that really helps. And then when you are evaluating each candidate, each prospective employee against each question that's answered, then you are reducing the bias that kind of comes from interviewing someone. So you can do all of that online. You don't have to be sitting in front of them. You don't have to have a panel. Panels aren't great because candidates can pick up clues from those asking the questions. So first kind of like process is by having the work sample questions and then drilling down on who is coming through to have another interview. So it could be a final interview stage. You don't have to have, you know, when you want to increase the number of women on the team, you don't have to have a female interviewer. you just have to have someone who believes in the mission and perhaps has gone through some training, some competent training on how to interview and so that they're aware of biases and things like that. So a lot of companies will think, oh, we have to, you know, we have to have a woman there interviewing, but you don't. So those are kind of like common mistakes that are made and ways to kind of like rectify those. There are other kind of situations that I've seen, like horror stories whereby some women are tested, they're given a harder test just to check that they can actually do the job. There was a situation that I came across the other week whereby people were answering a test remotely and the instructions that were given weren't particularly clear. So the women kind of abided by rules that they thought existed, whereas the guys didn't. They just kind of got on. They used their initiative. If they didn't know the answer to a question, then they Googled it or whatever. There weren't any rules to say you couldn't do that. So they just applied themselves and did that, whereas the women didn't. They thought, for whatever reason, that they couldn't do that. If they didn't know the answer to the question, then they were a failure, or that was something that was lacking in them, their knowledge, you know, a knowledge gap that was lacking. So they thought that they would be cheating if they actually went to Google, pulled out the phone or something like that. Now, nobody realized until, you know, the results came through and they realized that actually not many women were, you know, were coming through, and they also understood what was actually going on behind the scenes, you know. So again, it's women tend to be more compliant. They tend to abide by the rules, you know, much more than the men. It doesn't make anybody wrong. It's just something to watch out for if you're applying a test. Make sure that your rules are really, really clear so that no one kind of gets left behind or, you know, comes through. So, yeah, those are the main look out
for. And, you know, things like job descriptions, you know, I've heard it said, you know, that as a big generalization, men will often apply, sort of try and punch above their weight in terms of apply for a lot of jobs that they're clearly not qualified for, or they really push the boundaries in terms of what they do, and often just ignore requirements, you know, in a job description.
Yeah.
Whereas sometimes it can be kind of different for a woman, you know, oh, I don't have exactly 7 years experience, maybe I have 6, and so I can't apply for that role, you know. So whereas someone else might just go, oh yeah, sure, I'll just give it a shot.
Yeah, I'm trying to take a point.
So being I guess more accurate in terms of, and sometimes employers, and I've certainly been in this position myself, where it's like, oh, I would happily talk to somebody who's less qualified, but that wasn't explicit, you know, and so maybe people were just naturally filtered out of that process who could have actually been in the pipeline, but, you know.
I mean, I remember going for an interview recently, and, you know, occasionally I've worked, you know, had a portfolio career, so worked as an executive for companies like Accenture was the last one, as a managing director. But I remember another company approaching me about being a regional lead. And, you know, I looked at the job description and it was just like, yeah, I don't have that. I don't have that. So, you know, I said to the interviewer, the lead, you know, if you want someone technical as per the job description, that's not me, you know. And he was just like, no, we don't. We just want someone who can lead. You know, we want competent leaders. That is the main. So, you know, for him, you know, it was a great conversation that we had. But his takeaway was like, right, I need to kind of go back to talent and acquisition, HR, and make sure that these job descriptions are tidied up, because actually we've just got something out that is not describing the type of person that we want to come on board. So yeah, it's really taking the time, because otherwise you're just like falling at the first hurdle.
Yeah, indeed. And I saw, you know, one of the things I've done, which is really easy to do, which I think can make a really big difference, is if you're writing a job description, particularly if you're a guy, is to pass it to a colleague or pass it to someone that you know, they can read it and sort of just give their impression on it. They might change some words. They might question things a little bit, because it's really hard to sometimes see this in yourself. And so you need the support of other people. And I've done that and it's made a huge difference, and it's really simple to do, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Huge. A little bit about, tell me, you know, just touch on sort of working arrangements, because, you know, we're no longer really necessarily 9-to-5 in the office, although you know, some industries and some businesses still insist on that. But, you know, like people who are raising families or picking up kids from school and doing all sorts of things require the flexibility, right? And I think that, you know, just not having that flexibility or not advertising it in the first place can automatically exclude people who may not realize that that's even possible.
Absolutely. Well, more and more people are looking for that. It's not just a case of women. So, no, I looked at a piece of research the other day, and it was talking about women and pay, and women are still paid unfairly or like not in line with their peers in tech. And there's a myth out there that women want the flexibility, they want the benefits, you know, and they're not so interested in the pay. And that is just a myth. Like, with this bit of research, I can't remember which company did it, but it was like 55% of women kind of said, no, we want the money, you know. So, but it's not just women, it's all people. Like, more and more people, particularly millennials, are kind of like looking for, and I do want to say that work-life balance, but it's like they're looking for a different experience. So they want so much more. And I'm excited by that, because I think companies have a real opportunity to change, and they're driving that change. You know, so since the pandemic, you know, pandemic has changed everything. And we've got such an opportunity to really create these fantastic environments that work for more people. You know, so it could be a single parent, you know, at home. It could be someone with small children. It could be a carer, you know, someone looking after their elderly parents. You know, often it is a case that that falls to women, but not always. And whatever the case, it's just like really ensuring that the work gets done. I mean, you and I are both business owners. You know, I'm sure you're like me. I don't care, you know, how you do this, just make it work. You know, it's just like the quality, the standard, get the job done. You don't have to be in the office. You can be working from a beach, you know, in Thailand, like living the dream. But there are certain deliverables and a standard that needs to be executed. So you do that, how you do it is, you know, I'm fine with. So I think companies that aren't doing that are really, you know, losing out. You know, employees are pushing back, and they're not being as prepared to tolerate, you know, no matter the brand, you know, that, you know, that they're working for. I mean, the great resignation, we saw so many people leaving jobs, you know, after COVID, because they just thought, you know what, it's just, I'm not prepared to do this anymore. Like, life is too short. I'm capable, and I want to find a company who I can work with that enables me to do my best work, and I'm surrounded by people I get on with, and I'm actually having much more fun and fulfillment, you know, by doing this. Or I'm going out and creating my own company, you know, because it's time, you know, I can do it.
And, you know, the interesting thing about, you know, benefits and money is that, yes, at a certain point, there's a certain point, I think, where it doesn't make as much difference, you know, whether you are. You know, obviously, money's great. We like money. We want to earn more. Yeah. But I've seen people leave companies for an environment where it offers better balance, better leadership, you know, just quite frankly, more intellectually stimulating. And actually, money's kind of like second or third on the list.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, as managers or as leaders, that's actually really important, because you won't be able to retain your staff, even if you've got the best benefits in the world. And so if you're not developing people, you're not leading them well, I don't think they'll last long.
It's true. And I see it so much with leaders. You know, it's just like, I want to be in security leaders. I want to be able to do my job. And here there's just so much bureaucracy, and it's not fun. You know, it's sucking the life, you know, out of this, my love, my passion, you know, out of this job. I've seen so many leave, and they go and join startups. You know, they usually go and do that. Some of them go and create their own companies and do like the whole virtual CISO thing. But many either go into consultancies where they don't have the pains that they've experienced, you know, in the big corporations and the bureaucracy, or they go into these startups where they can actually really make an impact, and they can actually do the job that they love. And they're just not weighed down by the bureaucracy that goes on, this report writing or change this word or whatever. It's like, no, this is not keeping us safe. This is just bureaucracy. So I see so much of that going on. And yeah, they will take, you know, that's not related to gender at all. It's human beings. They will take a pay cut in order to do that. And they're not tolerating as much in the environments, you know, what with the stress, the burnout, the attacks that are coming at us. It's harsh, you know, it's really dangerous. right now. It's never been as bad as it is right now.
What are some things, if we're in a leadership position, you know, which many of us will be, whether we own a company, whether we manage a team, whether whatever we do, or just we're heavily influential in the company, what are some things we can do right now, you know, particularly at this point in time in the world where things are, you know, still not, you know, things are fragile and there's lots going on in the world. What are some things we can do for our people now and some things we can really focus on as leaders?
Well, I think one of the first things that you can do as a leader is go and speak to your people. Like, you know, if you're not speaking to them, get to know them. And this was something that I did. I went into a Fortune 500 company, and really this was an exercise I did just with women, but it doesn't have to be related, you know, to women. But I went straight in and heard from them, like, what's going on? You know, where are your frustrations? Where are your challenges? And picked up problems that no one was aware of. Now, because of that, that meant that an intervention could be put in place and those women were kept, you know, so it's just like probably about 10% of those women were at risk of leaving and they were kept because that happened. So I think the first thing to do is really go in and speak to your people and find out what is going on. I mean, certainly as a leader, I would be looking at yourself. So are you competent to lead? Do you need to be re-examining your skills? Because let's face it, we all get into bad habits, you know, and it could be a case of, oh yeah, I've forgotten about that. Yeah, I remember how to do that now. Or actually plugging a gap that you don't know, you know, is there, so that you can pick up on some of these signals that are going on. So one of the, you know, for me, I think a lot of training can be quite academic. It can be quite theory based, and it's like, oh my God, I've got to remember that and, you know, and that and that and that. But one of the models or trainings that I like the most, and I'm a certified trainer in, is the Liberating Leadership Model. And that talks about really leader developers. You know, as a leader, you want to develop more leaders. And having this mindset, which is so important for leaders, this high challenge, high support mindset. And with a high challenge, high support mindset, and you really are able, when you've got that process going, you're able to have a pipeline of talent, you know, ready to come into your organization. You've got employees who are really clear on what they're doing. They love coming to work. They're telling everyone else in their network, their circle, to come and work for you. They're just spreading the word about how amazing you are. And they are stretched and they are challenged and supported in equal doses. You know, so with the high challenge, high support model, I'll just run through it. You know, at the kind of the worst end of it, if you imagine a circle with quarters, in one segment, you have low challenge, low support. And this is where people come into your organization and they're not getting feedback and they don't really know necessarily what they're doing. They could be doing good work or they might not be doing good work, but they're not getting any feedback. They're not getting any direction. So as a result, they might turn up and their work is just very, very substandard or average. You know, it's not good. It's full of jobs worth. And then you have another segment where you have high support and low challenge. And in this kind of segment, these people are really supported well. You know, they're supported emotionally, they're supported financially, but they're not challenged. So they become very reliant on you as a leader. So they look for direction. They're not self-directing. And they become very resistant to change as well. So very set in their ways, resistant to change. So as a result, you're not getting your best work from these people. And then you have, in another segment, you have low support and high challenge. And this is an environment that I see so often. You're thrown in at the deep end. It's sink or swim. It's high stress. It's burnout. Loads of people leave. Some people cope really well in that environment and they do great work, but many people don't. You know, and if those people do well, then there's no kind of methodology. There's no set way of doing things. It becomes their way. And so it's not repeatable. You know, so the area that you want is that high challenge, high support, where the instructions are clear, the boundaries are clear, people are doing their best work. I'm okay, you're okay. And there's a whole process for that. So, you know, getting clear on your vision, your mission, all of that stuff, you know, really understanding what makes you unique, your team unique, and then like mobilizing, you know, your troops after that. So mobilizing and developing and enabling, those are the next kind of steps from that. But it's a process.
I really like that sort of quadrant style model. Yeah. It's really easy to understand. And I think we'll have examples of people that we know ourselves have been in, maybe all four of those at any one time in our career. And I think, you know, there's sometimes a prevalence. I think the high challenge, low support model is often prevalent in startups, because there can be, or maybe not just startups, but that's mostly my experience, where there's this sort of heroic belief that if you just throw people in the deep end, they'll achieve these heroic feats, you know, and sometimes that includes asking people to do things they've literally never done before.
Absolutely.
And it can be a time and place with the right support, but if you're literally just asking people to do a job they have no experience in and have no support in, you're kind of setting people up for failure, and that's massively demoralizing for people. But if they have, I think what you're saying is, if they have the right amount of support, then that failure turns into success, into achieving things, which is hugely motivating, and people will stick around for that, and can be sometimes the highlights of their career. You know, those amazing moments that you think about, you know, 10 or 15 years later, you're like, this was a really intense time and we were working really hard. We achieved this thing, you know.
So
true. And almost engineering those moments in a sort of healthy and supportive way for people can be hugely, hugely motivating.
Completely, yeah. All pulling in the right direction, and, you know, all inspired by one another. And, you know, even when things go wrong, you're able to go in and you know what to do. You know, it's just like, and other people can see you doing that as well. So those environments are really, really good with change. They are brilliant for change. And let's face it, you know, the amount of change that is being thrown at us, you know, right now is vast. So you want people who can adapt, who are self-directing, who are clear, who can repeat, you know, but they've got the guidelines that they're safe. So it's the psychological safety that is created.
Psychological safety, yes. You can create an environment where it's okay to ask questions, it's okay to you know, to operate in a safe way, then you enable people to achieve a lot more. I was going to say something that's skipped my brain for now, but I really like, what are some other things, you know, that the mistakes that leaders are making, you know, that these days, like what is maybe sort of top three things that the leaders are making that we can fix, you know, maybe these are kind of like the most common level things that we need, you know, we might be doing without even realizing it.
Yeah. I mean, another one, so we've spoken about like speak to people and find out what's going on. Also, like, look at your team, you know, like you need to speak to, you know, your managers or your directors, you know, is what's really going on. That feedback, is that really what's going on? And you'll find that. Speak to your people, because sometimes it's not. But the other thing is, I think, have a growth mindset. You know, a lot of leaders, I think that they know things and they don't. They're really closed and fixed. And I'll come across this so often, you know, with leaders and speaking to them, and it will be, yeah, I know that. Yeah, I know that. And it's really clear that they don't, you know, from their actions. So it's really kind of, I think, like taking a moment to stop yourself or to expand your thinking, you know, be more open-minded, you know, have that growth mindset and challenge yourself to think maybe in a different way and expand your circle, your network. Because if you've got people who are agreeing with you or, you know, just saying yes, then you're going to be quite limited by that. So this is where the diversity can really like come into play. Yes. How many times have you come across someone who might be the polar opposite of you, and they've really kind of like, you know, aggravated you, pissed you off, whatever? I mean, I can think of like one guy who, you know, in my past, he really used to annoy the living daylights out of me. He really did. He just irritate me, because he was so kind of like feely. Everything's about the feel. And I'm like, no, you know, I'm about money. And I went completely the opposite. So I'm about the money. It's not about the feeling. You know, don't give a shit about that. Show me the money. Show me the money. He was like, feeling, you know. And anyway, it was, but I recognized he was such a good person. He was such a nice person. You know, values, we were completely aligned. But he bugged the living daylights out of me. But he made me better because even though I could recognize my reaction and my polarity and going to, and not an even worse version of myself, but that extreme version of myself, he really helped me. I was aware, and this is the important thing. You have to have that awareness because he helped me to actually see things in a different way. And so yes. it's great to have that diversity within your network or within your company so that you can do better, you know, then and see things in a different way, see things through a different lens and be more open-minded and challenge yourself and get the goodness, the gold that comes from all of that.
It's amazing to have at least someone that you come away from a conversation really thinking or really going, you know, if they're an advisor, you know, really going, oh man, I've got a lot to learn there or a lot to do there. Like those, they're uncomfortable, you know, and sometimes you prefer not to have those conversations, but you end up much better for it. And you're ultimately thankful that they existed. And I think the other thing I would say is to kind of add to your point about growing and having a growth mindset itself as a leader. It's really, really, really helpful if you have someone that knows you quite well, kind of observing and giving you feedback, because it's really hard to do this yourself, you know, and sometimes it can be not many people in the position to do that. Maybe you own a company, your staff is really not going to do that very, you know, unless you've got a super cordial kind of thing going on. But generally, someone else who's more sort of your peer or you don't have any sort of power dynamic over, they can say, hey, look, you know, and maybe ask you an empowering question and talk about your style of doing things.
Yeah.
And that can be massively helpful because often sometimes the feedback loops and the stuff is super long.
I definitely agree. And that could be a mentor. It could be a coach. It could be being part of a mastermind group. You know, it could be a family member, you know, whatever. Yeah. But, you know, I'm, if you want to do a better job, then you need to seek skilled people that can come into your company and work, you know, with you. But you need someone as a leader to help you to become better. You know, that's what coaches do, like football teams, tennis players, you know, whatever your sport is. If you want to do a better job and go to the next level, and you have a coach, you know, who helps you get there. So, and you can have lots of different coaches for different aspects, you know, whatever it is. Or you could find one coach that actually can deal with all of those. But I like to use combination of training, coaches, masterminds, because I think that peer support group, the community, because I think they work really, really well. And especially when you mix it up and it's quite diverse in terms of industry.
Yes. And I would say, you know, if you're going into management for the first time, you really, really need that. I think that's really, really important to have. And if you're putting someone in management in your company, they really need that too. And I've seen, you know, what happens when that's not present, and it can, you know, it can be pretty, you know, pretty messy sometimes. And so I would say, you know, I think really if a company's in a high growth situation, it's really, really important to make sure that people are well resourced and supported to actually do this job, because it's quite difficult at times, especially if they're growing from sort of really technical roles into like people management. It's like quite a big transition. some people just sort of are natural, but other folks, it's a really, really big transition, and you often learn a lot about yourself. And so it's a huge growth kind of moment, which needs to be supported. Yeah, indeed. Hey, look, I can't believe how fast this is all gone. We're coming at 40 minutes, so I think we'll probably wind it up there. Perhaps we could do a chapter two again in the future with Jane. But thank you again for your time, Jane. It's been a really, really a pleasure listening to your experience and just your wisdom around all of this. So thank you.
Thanks so much, Bill. Thank you.
No problem. Look, if you've got anyone that's got a question for Jane or for myself, please just pop a comment below wherever you're watching this. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to respond to that and help you out as well. So please don't be shy. And we'll see you next time.
This is Upwards, the podcast for security and tech leaders, brought to you by Onwardly. Don't forget to rate and review wherever you get your podcasts, and join us again next time for more on security, startups, and leadership.